I don't know if I've, well, maybe I have, but I don't know that I've ever spent more time talking with a faculty member than I did last year with Stephen Boyette. And as much as I talked with him, I just heard tonight that Jared was up at 4 or 5 in the morning, and the two of them were talking all night. It's just fascinating. He's one of those rare authors who not only sold his first manuscript, but he saw it go on to be an incredibly successful book. And I think you wrote it when you were, what, 19? And you were, what, 20?
I faintly remember that, yes.
21 when it was published?
When it was sold.
When it sold. Okay, and how old were you when it was published? 22?
22 and a half.
Okay. And then 25 years later, after that manuscript...
Oh, thanks. Thanks. Cat's out of the bag now.
I knew y'all could do the math. 25 years later, it had become a cult classic. 25 years later, the sequel, Elegy Beach, was published.
I type slow.
In between, he's written screenplays, published stories in literary magazines and horror anthologies, published essays, comic books, been a writing teacher, a website designer, and editor. He produces three of the world's most popular music podcasts. When he told me about them last year, I wasn't quite sure what a music podcast was.
If it's really obscure, I'm going to be very successful at it.
Okay. Yeah. And he's enormously creative, and he offered to step in and do the keynote for us this afternoon when he who shall remain nameless did not show up. And so please welcome Stephen Boyette.
I'd like very much to thank Jared and Antoinette for asking me to speak, and to thank James Fry for not showing up. I actually gave some serious consideration to just telling you that I'm James Fry. It seemed perfectly fitting. And gave me license to really do whatever the hell I want. But, you know, Antoinette and Jared get up here and thank the faculty who show up and donate their time, and I do think it's wonderful that happens, and I think it's wonderful the loyalty that people have to this place. I mean, people come here year after year. If you're studying, maybe you'll graduate, but but you know, I've talked to Jared and Antoinette a lot late at night here, sometimes over Patron, and I gotta tell you, you have no idea what goes on behind the scenes to get this done. These guys work like you would not believe. And trust me, they are not taking a trunk full of money from the tuition, going to Tahiti and drinking umbrella drinks the rest of the year. This is a labor of love. And these things are becoming more and more rare in this economy and in this environment. And your support is enormously essential. If you don't come next year, pimp it to somebody. Blog about this when you get home. Talk about it over water coolers. Make sure somebody comes in your stead, because an event like this is just not common. You know, the pay it forward philosophy here is really true, and it's easy to get all cornball, but I'm astonished that this happens, and happens at the level of expertise that it happens. So, you know, a hand for Jared and Antoinette, honestly. What they do is amazing. Now, I know that all of us have come here from a lot of different places and by an awful lot of different paths today. And I think we're probably all fairly different from each other. But by your very presence here today, I know that we at least have one thing in common. We love to write. We love the language. And the very meter of a well-crafted sentence can leave us dumbfounded, can leave us envious and determined, determined to learn how it was accomplished and what its place is in the larger scheme of words that goes to make a story or a book. Determined to integrate that into our own palette. This weekend, you're going to hear an awful lot about the need to believe in yourself as a writer, about determination, and the necessity to work hard at your craft and at your career, and about establishing your priorities and holding to them. You're going to be told a lot of anecdotes, painful and personal and sometimes even funny, but they're going to be about isolation, about striving toward a goal that others in your life may not even understand. and about the importance of returning to the wellspring of creativity again and again to reaffirm and to evolve that determination. And all of it's true, but because you're going to be told that a lot, I'm going to talk about some other aspects of being a writer that I don't hear discussed all that often. And I think that I can talk about them to you guys because last year was my first year here. And I was astonished at the level of craft among the students. You know, usually you kind of start, okay, the letter A sometimes stands for, you know. And you guys are really demanding, and I love that. You know, you got to bring your A game to teach here, and I think that's great. I think it's wonderful. And it's sort of what shaped why I'm giving this talk today, because I don't think you can give this to people starting out, or they may not go farther than that. Put plainly, what I want to talk about today is the notion that those priorities that you hear about all weekend long, and really at seminars and everything else, those necessities, that very determination and nearly monomaniacal belief can really be a deterrent to leading a happy life. Now here's the sad, blunt truth. Writing is lonely. After all the forum posts and tweets and luncheons and seminars and workshops, at the end of the day, it's really just you and a keyboard. And everything else, friends, family, job, life, is just a distraction. And when you love books more than anything, and language more than anything, and more than anything else in your life, with every atom in your body, and you want to write, and then to publish what you write, it's easy to do that to the exclusion of what is really important. I think in our determination as writers that we can easily forget the lessons imparted to us by the very stories we ourselves tell. That it is not the destination that counts, it's the journey, the things we see along the way. Now, I don't approach this subject remotely academically. As long as I can remember, I was a writer. Before I knew I wanted to be a writer, I was a writer. I was born to it. With some people, it's the ability to run 100 yards and shed opposing tackles like water. The ability to work complex equations in their head without the slightest doubt or hesitation. Or to pick up a glued assemblage of wood and catgut and break 1,000 hearts with the sawing of a bow. With me, it was and is, and always will be, language. I read comic books by flashlight under the covers in my, you know, in my bed late at night. I worried my parents because I stayed at home and read at least a book a day and didn't get out much. Can you imagine parents saying, would you just go hang on a street corner or something? But unlike far too many people, I did not mistake a love of reading for a desire to write. I wanted to be on the other side of that page. Something in me absolutely needed to do that. And it drove me, often remorselessly and unrewardingly. And it drove me harder than any other thing I have ever done. I started writing short stories in elementary school. In junior high school, I started submitting them. My goal was to be published before I was out of high school. Instead, I won a writing scholarship, and I attended university as a writing major, and I began my first novel, my first summer away from school. And from that moment on, I cared about nothing more than that. I cared about it more than any single thing. Money, grades, classes, accreditation, employability, matriculation. I cared about it more than anything except girls. I may have been obsessed, but I wasn't stupid. Chicks dig obsessed, ironic, tortured, artsy guys. I was failing every class at school, except my writing classes. And I had stopped going to my writing classes because I had no respect for the opinions of my peers. Because, in fact, I did not regard them as peers at all. They were people taking writing classes. I was a writer. So I quit school. And I lived in dire poverty with my girlfriend while I finished my first novel. And mostly I was supported by her waitressing jobs, I'd say about half that time. I finished that book when I was 19 years old. I rewrote it a bunch of times. I got a job word processing and proofreading for the University of for the Departments of History and English at the University of Florida. The university let me use their equipment after hours for my own work. This is back in the antediluvian days when word processing machines were made out of wood. My office opened onto the main hallway, and I met an absurd amount of hot chicks. I made $5 an hour, and it was the best job I've ever had in my life. I sold my first novel when I was 21. When it was published, my old university asked me to come and speak and give a reading, so I took a Greyhound bus from Gainesville to Tampa. And when Andy Solomon, my old writing teacher, got up in front of the class and introduced me, he said, "I want Steve to tell you how he got from where you're sitting to where he's standing in 4 years." And I got up in front of that class and I saw him, you know, standing there like waiting for some magic bullet, you know, the potion formula. And I said, "Well, I quit." That first novel, Ariel, it went through 4 printings in about as many months. And I thought, well, I've arrived. And Gainesville, Florida just wasn't much of a challenge for me anymore, and I thrive on challenge, so I moved to Los Angeles. I worked full-time in temp jobs, and I finished my second novel, and I sold it, and I kept writing, and I kept working. Then I got into a dispute with my publisher over my third novel, and I did something that doesn't really happen very often. I bought it back, and I hit the reset button on my career. I took that as an opportunity to step away from genre. Please step away from the genre. Which I was never really very comfortable being called, and I used that as an opportunity to write glorious, dark, artsy, pretentious, and mostly unsellable novels. I believed in myself, utterly. In fact, I think it's almost all I really believed in. I was just made of the kind of stuff that people are gonna talk to you about. I sold a few things along the way. Nothing major. I worked as a word processing operator and proofreader and ad copywriter, and I wrote like crazy every chance I got. My voice evolved and it strengthened, and selling my work was important, but it was also kind of immaterial because that never really brought me any satisfaction. Having readers didn't bring me satisfaction. Good reviews didn't, assuming, you know, when I get one. It's the work. The work was all that ever satisfied me. So I worked. And this went on for about 15 years. One day an agent who had liked a story of mine that I'd published in a literary magazine and requested to see my work rejected it with what I recall was a fairly devastating letter. I don't remember what it said because I set fire to it. I guess I showed him. And my agent at the time, my then current agent, sent back a novel that had been making the rounds and reported that basically, "I'm sorry, but this is kind of dead in the water." And Disney denied me a writing credit on Toy Story 2, despite the fact that the movie that got made is about 75% of what I wrote. If you liked it, you're welcome. And at a transcription job that was the single worst job that I have ever had, and buddy, that is saying something, someone recognized my name and they said, "Didn't you write a novel called The Architect of Sleep?" And let me tell you something, you want to eat some humble pie, you get recognized for a novel you wrote while you're working a crap job. All of those things happened the same week. So I decided that the universe really didn't want Steve to write, and who the hell am I to argue with the universe? What it was taking out of me to try to have a writing career was making me a little funny in the head. And certainly it was making me miserable. So I quit. No one believed me. But I didn't write a word for 5 years. Now, up until that time, I had only ever defined myself as a writer. I'd done a lot of other things, but they were really ancillary to my writing. I didn't have hobbies. Without writing, my life was suddenly a blank canvas. So I taught myself how to play the didgeridoo. How's that for a segue? I had always been interested in it, in the musical instrument, and it was a completely useless thing to know, which usually means I'm going to be good at it. And I was. Now, my usual approach when I learn something new is to try to exploit it once I learn it, to do new things with it, or to recontextualize it, and then to get it out there in the world somehow. This was the didgeridoo, folks. It's a hollow log that you blow into, right? I was not going to make a living at this. I was not going to get hot chicks. I was not going to be the James Joyce of the friggin' didgeridoo. And in a really weird way, that was liberating, because it was pure. I was doing it for the fun of it. I had absolutely no expectations regarding this. It was that model railroad that you build in the basement, right? And at the time, I had also started getting into electronic dance music. And I wanted to play the didgeridoo alongside it, because at the time, I'd never really heard anybody do that. So I taught myself how to compose electronic dance music. And I yelled, and I invented curse words, and I punched my computer, because it was so hard. And I produced 2 CDs of work that were, you know, pretty good for someone without an ounce of training or experience and probably talent. But here's the deal. It was fun. I learned so much about something I had never thought I would ever do, never even considered doing. And I met a lot of friends, I made a lot of friends who were making a living doing this. So then I taught myself how to DJ electronic dance music. And I produced 3 music podcasts that became and remain 3 of the most popular music podcasts in the world. And now, or since that time, I have DJed at the Hard Rock in Las Vegas and at Burning Man and a lot of amazing places. And in some ways, I'm really better known as a DJ than I will ever be known as a writer. But back then, when I was struggling for money, and not knowing what to call myself, and struggling to learn all this new stuff, and every day challenged, I stepped back one day from what was happening to me and tried to figure out, what's this weird emotion that I'm feeling? And I realized I was happy. And even weirder, I was happy, and I wasn't writing. Now, everything I had ever said about writing being the only thing that made me happy had just been proven to be absolute bullshit. Joseph Campbell famously said, "Do what you love, follow your bliss, and doors will open where you didn't even know they were going to be." We must be willing to get rid of the life that we've planned so as to have the life that is waiting for us. What happened with writing with me was that it was the life I had planned, and I didn't love it anymore. But I thought I needed it. And then I broke up with it. And in its absence, I fell in love with something else. And that something wasn't the didgeridoo, or electronic dance music, or being a DJ. It was my life. I fell in love with being alive. And after that, the things that I did weren't research. They were things I wanted to do. And my friends and my relationships no longer had as a necessary component the requirement of supporting my work. My loyalties were no longer divided between my friends and my work, love and my work. My life was my work. And every bit as worthy of attention and craft and growth as anything I was ever going to write. So after 4 or 5 years of this, I wrote a novel. I wrote it fast, and I wrote it for the fun of it, and I had no expectations regarding it. It was the didgeridoo all over again. It was that train set in the basement. It wasn't very good. I wobbled a bit when I got back on the bike, but it was fun. And it set the stage for me writing things that were good and still fun. And I sold the next thing I wrote. And my writing career was back again. And I was still having the time of my life. Why was I having fun and writing? Because I was no longer in a codependent relationship with myself. With the writer part of me. I worked just as hard at being a writer, but I had proven that I could live just fine without that melancholy son of a bitch. Now, I did not need him in order to be happy, and that freed me to hang out with the guy, and it turns out he's actually kind of fun if he'll just loosen up a little bit. The difference now was I wasn't pretending I didn't have a choice. Now I was choosing to write, choosing to be a writer. The philosophy that underlies the martial art of Aikido can be kind of hard for Westerners to understand, and it's basically full commitment and utter detachment. I feel pretty much like that's where I've gotten to as a writer now. I try to apply it across the board in my life, but it can be pretty hard. It's not automatic for me, and I am not exactly a detached kind of guy. But I know from experience that it is easy to become myopic about your writing, about being a writer, about having a writing career. Those are not the same things, as sadly few of your courses and workshops and teachers will tell you. It's easy to fall into the trap of believing that you have to care about your writing and your writing career more than any other thing in your life if you want to make it. If you want to survive and flourish and become known, this myopia, this monomania, makes all the work and frustration and heartbreak and isolation seem that much more important. They make the roller coaster seem worth the line. No less a writer than William Faulkner once said, "The writer's only responsibility is to his art. He will be completely ruthless if he is a good one. He has a dream. It anguishes him so much that he can't get rid of it. He has no peace until then. Everything goes by the board. Honor, pride, decency, security, happiness, all to get the book written. If a writer has to rob his mother, he will not hesitate. The ode on a Grecian urn is worth any number of old ladies." Well, let me tell you something. William Faulkner had a lousy life. And while this outlook may help justify the extremes that you go to in order to make your work better, it will just as certainly diminish the quality of your life. If I can convey any one hard-won lesson that I have learned in my career and in my life, it is the conviction in my very marrow that no book weighs more than a good friend, that no career outweighs a happy life, that you can be a good friend, good father, good husband, and still create good work. That sometimes leaving your desk to make your child a sandwich really is more important than that line you were about to write, however good it was going to be. That the notion that you have to pick the one above the other is a false dichotomy, self-aggrandizing, inflationary, melodramatic, and a continual wellspring of unnecessary anguish. And that not only do you not have to pick one, but paying attention to your life, your friends, your family, your co-workers, bus drivers, work commutes, buildings, the whole loud, teeming mess will make you a better writer. Because 90% of life is just showing up, the things we see along the way. But I want to be clear about something. I am not telling anyone to quit writing. And I'm not saying that the pursuit of that ever elusive grail of writing is going to entail a life of suffering. I'm simply suggesting that as you quest onward, you take care not to regard your life as an obstacle to or a distraction from your writing. Life is what you write about. So it helps if you have one. It'll help even more if you feel some involvement with it. I don't care if you write books about elves and werewolves. If your work's going to be honest, your life must be the grist for your mill. Just show up. And if your life itself becomes such a work of art and labor of love that you never write another word again, well, so what? Show me the tragedy in that. There are millions of books out there. You get one life. Now, I know that there are writers who would be livid at what I'm telling you, who would construe what I'm saying as a creed for quitters and also-rans, who believe that writing Ulysses really is a fair trade for a life of destitution and isolation and uncertainty. 15 years ago, I was one of those writers. Now, I think that's crazy. I'll go further. I think it's cowardly. For a page is a great deal easier to face and to control. I know firsthand now that if you are creative and you focus on your life, you're going to have a creative life. I know firsthand that this doesn't have to be at the expense of your art. The one will inform the other. They will enrich each other. And that your courage to love and to pursue what you love will lead you to some unexpected and amazing places. So attend your workshops and your luncheons and post on forums and tweet and listen to speeches by aphoristic and idealistic and dichotomous fools like me. But don't let that camouflage the fact that writing is a solitary business. And don't elevate that solitude to some kind of noble solitary confinement. Just write. But just as important, live. And find a balance where the beautiful work is what you make of your life, every bit as much as what you make during it. Thanks. That was for my high school graduation. I saved it all this time.
All right, very little time. What time is it?
I am going to send a copy of that to Bruce Fry, and I'm going to say thank you for showing up.
Thank you. Wait, is the mic still on?